Hey everyone! Before we get into today's pod, I want to tell you about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or, if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. And the best part is, you can get all of this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports experience. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box to find out more, but that's bwhustle.com/join.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into episode 944 of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. And joining me once again is the one and only Ben Fennell. You can follow him on Twitter at Ben_Fennell. Ben is a, I'm going to label him as a genius when it comes to covering the draft. He is the absolute best. I was just telling him I have a laundry list of Twitter notes in my draft document that Ben has put out. Ben, how the heck are you doing and how's your draft prep coming?
I'm doing well. As sad as I am this week, I should typically be heading to Indianapolis to enjoy a week-long experience at the scouting combine. So I'm a little sad to still be sitting in my office at NFL film. The draft is a beast. So it's fun to just dig into the film and keep researching. And it seems like it never ends.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot of fun, obviously, to go through and kind of unwrap these presents as you kind of look at some of the top prospects. And obviously, you go very, very deep. And I'm sure your notebook is there and your draft list is, I don't even know how many pages long. But Ben, we've got a lot to get to. We're going to start going over some of the cornerbacks in this year's draft. We also want to take a look at, you know, Mike Pettine being gone, Joe Barry replacing him. But I think probably what most people want to hear us talk about to begin with is, of course, WandaVision. So tell me your quick tweet-length review of your thoughts on WandaVision so far.
Well, I love it. It brings me right back to like we were watching Lost. After every episode, I'm looking up theories and Easter eggs, and I like the enigma and the mystery to it all. This is not a plot that's a sprint. You're not going to get the beginning and the end in one episode. So all these people that were upset with the initial couple episodes in that they didn't tell you what was going on, I loved it.
Yep.
That's the mystery of it all. It's a series. Play the full game. Play the whole season. Play the whole series. And I just love that it's kind of wrapped up in this mystery. And you don't really know what's going on and all the TV show nostalgia. But the thing is, it's really not for kids. You can't just pop into this having not known the timeline of the MCU universe. So I kind of like that you need some background knowledge. And I like that it's a mystery as you're watching it. I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I do too. I'm also a fan of the mystery box type of storytelling. I was a huge Lost fan. Westworld is another one of those that I just absolutely love. So love the love that sort of storytelling, and WandaVision is full of it with some of the MCU notes, tons of Easter eggs. I think they've just done a tremendous job on it. So now that that is out of the way, and obviously what everyone was honestly tuning in for, let's talk a little bit. I don't know that we have talked, and maybe I'm wrong here, but since Mike Pettine had been let go, I know you and I don't want to put words in your mouth. I know I had understood a lot of what Mike Pettine was trying to accomplish. And I think both you and I were trying to, you know, tell people this is what, you know, Mike Pettine's trying to do. And there's advantages to it. There's disadvantage to it, just as there is with any defensive system. Well, Mike Pettine's gone. I think ultimately, I think it was the right move, although time will tell. Joe Barry, an interesting candidate to bring in as a defensive coordinator. As everyone knows at this point, did not have success in Washington or Detroit. As everyone knows at this point, did not have the tools in Washington or Detroit necessarily to be successful. But let's just start, Ben, with what were your thoughts on the dismissal of Mike Pettine and the hire of Joe Barry?
I think it was actually a day after I just said Mike Pettine has done enough to be retained. And then, of course, he was let go right on schedule there. But, you know, Joe Barry, I'm excited to get a coach that's been in one of the more dominant defenses over the last 4 years. So I'm excited what he's done in the, you know, the recency aspect of it. Obviously, there are some, you know, issues in Detroit and in Washington and some personnel, some scheme, some execution. But his body of work over the last 4 years is really interesting. But considering he was just a position coach under Wade Phillips and under Brandon Staley, there's still going to be a lot of kind of guessworking to do as far as what he wants to bring to Green Bay. So we can look at the Rams defense collectively over the last 4 years. You can look at Washington. You can look at Detroit. You want to go all the way back and watch some Monty Kiffin with the Bucks in early 2000s. He was there too. So I'd imagine, like all coaches, you're going to take a little bit of what you've learned along the way and try to find the best case and the best scheme to fit your next job and your next assignment.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, that anytime you bring in a new coach, whether it's an offensive coordinator, head coach, defensive coordinator, I think you want to be able to point to something and say, look at what he's done. And I'm really excited that he's going to be able to bring this to the team. And I'm not sure that I can necessarily pinpoint that thing with Joe Barry. It doesn't mean that it doesn't exist, but I'm not sure I can pinpoint that that thing with Joe Barry and say, look, this is what he's going to be bring to Green Bay, and I'm really excited about it. On the flip side of that, I look at, you know, when the Packers hired Nathaniel Hackett, and they had a lot of really smart minds in the room already. When you look at Rodgers and knowing McCarthy's offense, obviously LaFleur knowing Shanahan and McVay's style systems, you had kind of this blending of that. And well, now you've got Nathaniel Hackett coming in. He's got kind of a West Coast background, has a variety of different offenses that he knows. And now you've got another mind in that room that can bring something different to the table. There's a diversity there. Well, with Joe Barry, you've got Jerry Gray in the room who knows Zimmer stuff. You've got obviously everyone that knows Mike Pettine stuff. And now you're bringing someone who knows, of course, Wade Phillips, as you mentioned, the Tony Dungy Tampa 2. He knows that Brandon Staley and Vic Fangio style defense. They're not going to lack for any sort of type of defense or scheme or anything that they want to run. Now it's just going to be getting the players to buy in and execute to it. I'm impressed by his energy. I'm excited about, you know, overall what he brings to the table, but I do think it's an interesting hire.
And it's also important to note, just like Brandon Staley, now the head coach of the Los Angeles Chargers, and Joe Barry being the defensive coordinator of the Packers, you have to wonder what their situation is going to be like without a Aaron Donald and a Jalen Ramsey and some generational talents at some very key positions. So now it's really going to be interesting to see who was making who. We know the Rams were a steady, consistent, productive defense for the last 4 or 5 years. Was it the Jimmys and the Joes or the X's and O's? Or is it going to take a combination of both? And obviously it's a combination, but it's a matter of whether he's going to have the same types of dogs and horses in Green Bay to get the same type of results.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you can make a strong argument. Certainly Kenny Clark's not Aaron Donald. Nobody is. And Jair Alexander, Jalen Ramsey, that argument could be made, you know, all day long, but at least they've got similar type of players at the same positions that are at least really damn good, if nothing else. The other thing that was, I don't know that it's necessarily a red flag to me, but it is at least noteworthy nonetheless that, you know, when Brandon Staley left, the Rams had a defensive coordinator opening. And when Brandon Staley took the Chargers job, he had a defensive coordinator opening. And neither of those went to Joe Barry, interestingly enough. So it doesn't mean, again, that it's a bad hire. It doesn't mean that, you know, he wasn't next up on either of their lists. But it is interesting to me nonetheless that the two coaches that, that knew him best had defensive coordinator openings, and neither of them went specifically with Joe Barry for that opening.
Yeah, and I think his labeling is also interesting because he was technically the assistant head coach in Los Angeles. So if Brandon Staley takes the job with the Chargers, he's sure obviously going to run his defense. So that means the defensive coordinator spot is open by title, but it will be Staley's obviously team and defense. So it may be viewed as a lateral move almost for Joe Barry to go from the assistant head coach, LB coach, to the defensive coordinator that he really won't have a lot of collective say over.
Anything that you're specifically looking for out of a Joe Barry defense that you think, you know, you'd like to see Green Bay do differently, or that you think he could bring to Green Bay or utilize the talent that's here maybe differently, better, whatever, than what Mike Pettine did?
Yeah, you know, and just to kind of talk about this in an all-encompassing sense, the last two seasons, my favorite defenses around the NFL, Indianapolis Colts, Buffalo Bills, Los Angeles Rams, Green Bay Packers, for one particular reason. They are all zone-based defenses. They are all conservative-based defenses. And when you get conservative zone defenses, there are some pros and cons to it. And I like the pros outweighing the cons for 2020, 2021 NFL, where it's really tough to play defense. It's something we've talked about throughout the seasons about really tempering our expectations on defensive football. It's tough to be a dominant defense. So it's really calibrating. What do you want? And I want teams to stop the run, prevent big plays, get off the field on third down, and be opportunistic. Get those key turnovers or maybe a couple of those sacks. And that's what the Rams have really done particularly well under Brandon Staley and under Joe Barry's tutelage, is conservative defense that prevents the big plays. They stop the run. You're going to rush four most of the time, not blitz a whole lot. A lot of vanilla defenses because it's zone. You have your eyes in the backfield, so you don't give a lot of QB runs and scrambles and some of those late in the down things. And the consistent thing over the last 4 years, tackling has been excellent. So when you get these conservative defenses, it's a, we're not going to make the mistake. We're going to wait for you to make the mistake. And that's the cat and mouse of aggressive defenses, exotic defenses, high pressure defenses, you know, pressure man defenses, is their high variance. There's a big risk reward with those. So I'm in a camp of being a little bit more vanilla right now and saying, you know what? Let's wait for the offense to make the mistake. And just going back to the tackling the last 3 years, the Rams were fourth, seventh, and first as far as missed tackles. This is a technically sound team that tackles well, rallies to the football, and does all the little things right. So I may not be inspiring Packers fans that have this big exotic defenses that get after opposing quarterbacks. It's a little boring. It's a little vanilla, but I think that's okay, Andy.
I'm with you. And I know you and I have had these conversations of what Mike Pettine was trying to accomplish. I think this year, the issue is, you know, especially early in the year, they weren't getting those turnovers and they weren't always getting off the field on third downs. And some of those bend but don't break situations were turning into touchdowns, where in 2019, a lot of them were turning into field goals. And then you just had some situational football issues, certainly in the you know, NFC Championship game as well, which I think all ultimately led to the release. But I'm with you. I think people see, you know, a lot of these different exotic concepts and wanting to bring more blitzing and stuff like that. But as you mentioned, there's a risk reward to that, and allowing the defense an opportunity to be in a position to make plays. I think that's the right way to go. And it really transitions well to looking at the cornerbacks that we're going to in just a little bit, because you brought up tackling and how important that is. Well, Kevin King and various others amongst this Packers defensive group have had issues with tackling over the course of the past couple seasons, and finding corners who can tackle are hard. Ben, as we start going through a few of these top corners, let me just ask you and start off with things. Who's number one A on your cornerback board this year?
So I'm going to go with Caleb Farley out of Virginia Tech over Patrick Surtain, who had opted out of 2020. So he's a little bit out of sight, out of mind, but he's the height, weight, speed, press corner, alpha dog that you're looking for on the outside. Not saying that's a fit for every scheme, but if that's what you need to erase an X receiver in the NFL, that's Caleb Farley for you.
Yeah. So with Farley, you know, it's interesting. I fully believe and agree that he's the top prospect in this draft. I think he has the most talent, but I do think it's interesting, you know, when you start looking at, you know, the differences between him and Surtain. You know, I thought he, you know, fairly struggled a bit more in 2018, really loved what he did in 2019. I don't think there's much debate about that. If he would have come back in 2020 and had the exact same season that he had in 2019, I think he's quarterback or cornerback 1A all day long. I just, with just the 1 year and of really high performing play, even though I think he's the most talented, I gave the nod to Surtain just a little bit, and I could still go back and forth a million times between now and draft day. But I just like the consistency a little bit more with Surtain, almost to the point where, like, he was so consistent that it was boring watching Surtain at times, just, you know, do the same thing over and over with the level of consistency that he had. But I agree with you that I think Farley's going to go as the first corner off the board, and I won't have any gripe about that whatsoever. But the 1 year of really strong play in 2019 was the only thing that made me believe maybe that Surtain would maybe get the nod there.
Yeah, and that's fair. And Caleb Farley's a guy that's been on the freak list the past 2 years for, you know, his 4.35 official 40. He's got the track speed, but listen, he's grabby, tons of DPIs, tons of holds down the field, but it's okay. We can temper back the aggressive guy as opposed to dialing up the timid guy. And he really reminds me of a Marlon Humphrey style of player. Surtain, I just don't think is going to test as well. A little more stiff in the hips. He's more of a lean on you and kind of use his size and physicality to erase receivers there. But my comp is a Stephon Gilmore. So those are two obviously elite corners in the NFL that have done some really good things. I think if you're getting anywhere close to those prospects, teams will be happy.
Just to clarify, Gilmore was your comp for Farley or for Surtain?
For Surtain. And Marlon Humphrey was my Caleb Farley.
I heard Trumaine Johnson for Surtain too, and I kind of like that a little bit as well. I think Surtain's a little bit more fluid than what Trumaine Johnson was, but I can see some of the similarities there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. You see the size, the height, weight, speed type of prospect.
All right, so I don't want to put words in your mouth. Again, it was Surtain number two on your list, or did you have somebody that you would even put above Surtain there?
I had Surtain as two, and then three, those three peas in a pod, those big press corners with JC Horn as my corner three.
So I'm really intrigued by JC Horn because I don't think there's anyone in the world that can throw on tape of JC Horn and not enjoy watching him play football. Like, he's just a really fun player to watch. I don't necessarily know that his technique always matches his athleticism and his, just overall, I don't know, piss and vinegar and just the way that he plays the game. I absolutely love watching him play. I kind of equated him not stylistically, but just in overall, I don't even know how to explain it, but like to a Marcus Peters, who's a little bit more boom bust in the fact that Marcus Peters is going to constantly make plays for you, but there's going to be a time here and there where he just gives up a massive play. And I could see that kind of similar career arc for JC Horn, where I don't even care if he gives up a big player now and again, because he's such a fun player and he's going to make big plays and he's going to be good in coverage more often than not. But I do think he's very, very grabby. You mentioned that with Farley as well. I do think he's a little bit even more grabby at the point of attack. But again, I just don't know how you don't like him when you watch him.
Yeah, there's certainly some high variance in his production. And you can go right to 2019, where he got absolutely baptized against Alabama, that stable of receivers, and then didn't play against the undefeated LSU national champions, which would have been a great litmus test against Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase. But just to compare to Marcus Peters, the high variance play, but he's much more of a willing physical participant as Absolutely. A football player, in my opinion. He's willing to contribute in run support. He obviously can see some of the physicality, number one, through the penalties, which is a real fine line of aggression. This is a corner that's got a number of forced fumbles in his career, too. So the guy is just willing to come up, throw his body around in that 6'1", 200-pound frame. And an Aqib Talib style of player, I think, is what he can ascend and be. But he's a guy that looks like a top five corner some weeks and a day three corner in other weeks. And I think there's a couple prospects in the draft that have some high variance tape that you really have to figure out, what are you getting?
Yeah, and I think that's the best way to put it, is that high variance. And in no way, shape, or form, stylistically, is he the same as Marcus Peters. But Marcus Peters obviously has some of that high variance as well. And like you said, he's definitely not afraid to come up and be physical in the run game, be physical as a defender at any level of the field. I like him. He's kind of one of those players when I watch, it's like, I don't know. And again, just putting my fake GM hat on here for a second, I don't know that I necessarily want to draft him, but I also like don't want anything to do with him in my division or my conference at the same time. Like, let him go to like the Titans or Texans or Jaguars or something. And I'll see him, you know, once every 4 years and that'll be great. Like, I still think he's going to be really good. I don't know. He's just a really interesting watch.
Yeah, but he's a good, big, physical, height, weight, speed, press corner. So a lot of teams feel that's a coveted spot. But like I had mentioned, those four defenses that I love, the zone-based defenses, they may not be perfect fits for him. And I think some of these off-coverage zone corners are just as intriguing, but they just don't have the billboard of being a press man, you know, 200-pound, 6'1 corner. But there's some good zone corners out there too.
All right, so who's next on your list in that group of three?
So it's going to be Farley, Surtain, JC Horn as my big press corners. And then I have Asante Samuel Jr.
Yeah.
Who is that proverbial zone corner of the group, that off coverage guy, a guy that lacks the size, but has the click and close, has the ball skills, has the physical temperament, obviously the lineage coming from his dad and what he has done. But we just don't get as excited about these types because we think they're that much more limited. But, you know, we saw a Byron Murphy go early in the second round a couple of years ago. And a lot of the things Asante Samuel Jr. did well and struggled with were some of the same things that were on Jaire Alexander's report at Louisville. Physical, ball skills, excellent play temperament, can get bodied at the catch point by bigger receivers, being 5'10", 185 pounds, that happens. But if you get him in a zone scheme, an off coverage scheme, he's a guy that can really make you pay with his click and close and ball skills. It just won't be for every scheme.
Yeah, this is one of the first of two corners that I really fell in love with just watching him play. I saw a little of Jaire in his game. I saw a little Casey Hayward in his game too, just kind of some of the zone skills, those ball hawking skills. I saw some of that as well. Again, as you mentioned, he's not necessarily going to fit every single system, but his agility and, as you mentioned, the click and close as well as what just kind of immediately stood off the page. I think we're getting a little bit too, as we start looking at, as you mentioned, some of these more vanilla defenses that are, you know, playing off, keeping their eyes on the quarterback. It almost seems like there are times where, I'll just use Aaron Rodgers as an example. We know that Aaron isn't going to be one that's going to necessarily throw into coverage as much, even if it's a 6'3 receiver on a 5'10 corner. If there's sticky coverage there, we're seeing less and less that quarterbacks are taking chances in those situations. So maybe, as you know, before, and there's certainly still the Allen Robinsons and a multitude of other receivers who can take advantage of some of those size mismatches. But, and I think for Green Bay, you have to think about, are you okay, you know, with a Samuel and a Jaire as your two top corners? But overall, I think as you get more and more into needing all these different matchups, if you can have good sticky coverage, even if you're giving up a few inches, I still think it's more advantageous to have that than a corner who's taller and can match up with height, but doesn't have the agility to match up with other matchups across the field. So I don't know how you feel about that, but I'm more leaning that way lately.
Yeah, and that's fair. And I think some of the problem with like a Kevin King's play is, if you're going to use a conservative coverage scheme, like a zone coverage, eyes in the backfield, give up a high volume of completions underneath, you have to defend downfield and you have to come up and tackle. So I think finding someone to fit the scheme, if they are zone corners, they better be feisty. They better be able to click and close and drive on balls and jump, you know, passing lanes and get their hands on balls and be able to play the ball down the field. So I think finding guys that fit that are better. And there's a lot of corners around college football that they don't want turning and running anymore. They don't want pedaling. And this new form of side saddle, which is a bailing way to play cornerback, where you're kind of playing with your butt to the sideline, very much in a sideways position. Your eyes are in the backfield. You can kind of keep an eye on the receiver. But there's a lot of corners around college football that are playing this way because of that. Whether it's a issue in pedal, whether it's an issue in transition, whether it's an issue finding the ball down the field, this allows them to keep their eyes forward. And these big, bad Georgia corners are kind of front and center for how they play.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up because that's where I wanted to go next. Eric Stoats and Tyson Campbell. Your thoughts? Tyson Campbell is the one that I've watched a ton of, and I just can't fully wrap my head around yet of where I want to put him and how I feel about him. I'm like, on one game, I'm like super jacked. And then the next game, I'm like, no, thank you. So I'm excited to hear your takes on Stoats and Campbell.
So Campbell, I want in a cover three bailing zone scheme. Like I just said, that side saddle, I want his eyes in the backfield. He can transition and click and close really well. But when he's in man coverage, he just does not find the ball down the field. He's given up a bunch of big plays where he doesn't get his head around, but none of the Georgia corners do. So it might be something that's coached and they're taught more to rake at the catch pocket rather than get their head around and find the ball. Eric Stoats, a little bit more of a pedigree to play press man, but another guy I think does better when he has separation from the receiver. And what I mean by that is there's some corners that want to lean on you and feel you and put their butt on you and battle you. And then there's some that would rather have a force field around them and play in space and dart through passing lanes and attack the catch point and attack the ball. He's a guy that I think does better when he's away from the receiver. And DJ Daniels, another corner down there with a similar profile. He's kind of a mix of the two, of Stoats and Tyson Campbell. It's a guy that was down at the Senior Bowl. Guys that are very experienced, but inconsistent tape. And I think the style, scheme, and technique at the next level is really going to determine where they get drafted and if they have success or not.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I've seen a few different people say that, you know, they viewed, you know, Campbell as more of like a man corner. I'm like, the very first time I saw him, I'm like, literally my, I don't know, fourth or fifth note on my list here is that I think he'd fit perfectly in a cover three scheme, you know, having that size, speed, athleticism on the outside. I know he's, you know, a twitched up athlete overall, but I don't always necessarily see the man-to-man cover skills when I put him on tape. I agree with you a millionfold that I think he's much better fit for more of that zone kind of off scheme. The other one, you know, right there, I kind of go that way with Eric Murray too, on where I kind of feel about him. I see a little Sam Shields just with the speed in his game, some of the ball skills as well. But he's a really unique one as well that I like him more than I like Campbell. And I think he has more scheme versatility of being able to do a few more things. Both of those are two that of the cornerback class so far, I've struggled placing those two more than any of the others.
But what you're getting with all those Georgia defenders in that secondary, particularly the corners, tough, tough players. These are guys that will fight off blocks on the perimeter. They'll contribute to run support. They play with that alpha kind of FU mentality on the outside that you kind of need from your defensive backs these days, and just being really confident and having that swagger. But the coverage technique is obviously really going to depend on where they fall.
100%. And that's always my favorite. One of my favorite things on draft days is seeing what players go with what scheme fits. And because there's times where you end up with these perfect dream scenarios, and other times you're wondering how the hell it's going to work out. Hopefully some of these players get to go to some really great scheme fits.
Yeah. And really quick, Andy, you know, we may be boring some people with all this tackling talk with corners. Bill Belichick, Matt Patricia, their number one trait for corners, tackling.
Yeah.
As crazy as that is, we only get 11. Everybody has to tackle out there. And once you have liabilities on defense, tackling liabilities, that's when you start to get attacked. That's when you start to feel vulnerable. So having tough, reliable football players is all part of deploying a conservative defensive scheme. So in order to do that, you have to have everybody on the same page.
Yeah, you really do. And that's why we kind of kicked off with that, how important it is to watch some of these players tackle. Where do you want to go from here? We've got a few guys left that we want to cover. Greg Newsome, Aaron Robinson, Sean Wade. I'll let you pick your poison next.
You know, it's a really interesting defensive back group. Particularly I think that nickel position, some guys that have had some experience on the outside that can slide inside a nickel. There's some safeties that can come down and cover. I think Aaron Robinson at UCF is a really interesting player. He's an Alabama transfer. He's played corner for UCF. He's played safety. He's played nickel. He's been a special teamer. He's tall. He's long. He's aggressive. There's just a lot of types like this around college football. And whether it's Elijah Molden or Javon Holland or Damar Hamlin, who was a four-star corner going to Pittsburgh, converted to a nickel safety. I just think these are all guys with good size, good play temperament, and know how to cover out there. So that's what I'm looking for first. And in kind of the same pecking order as I just read it off. I want the toughness, the physicality, the size, and then can you cover somebody? And we just did a study over on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast with Fran Duffy. We studied the Colts defense because that's going to be our new defensive coordinator in Philadelphia. The one thing about that Colts defense, zone-based, there is nothing finesse anywhere. There's no skinny press man corners that don't want to tackle. There's no coverage linebacker that's a liability in the run. There's no skinny edge rusher that can't hold up at the point of attack. Everybody is built like a tank. Physical, tone setter, ready to tackle. And I think that's going to be more the trend in Green Bay, is getting rid of as many finesse players as you can find and getting tougher and more physical across the board.
Yeah. Ron Wolf's old adage was, if you start, drafting the exceptions, you end up with a whole team of exceptions. Like if you start, drafting exceptions to your rule. So, they had, specific height, weight, speeds. They wanted the physicality. They wanted those sort of things. And, he was basically going over in his book how, maybe you can take an exception here and there, but you start doing it and all of a sudden your whole team is an exception to the rule. And you end up with a team full of maybe players who aren't as physical or aren't tackling. So I always love that from Ron Wolf. You've got to fit, players that are going to fit that overall scheme and mentality. There's always a player like a Jaire Alexander or, Casey Hayward that can maybe, be a little bit undersized, do some different things, but you got to have a plan for how you want that defense to succeed. And sounds like the Colts certainly have that.
Yeah, absolutely. And if for Packers fans thinking, hey, we're moving on from Kevin King in free agency, what's the closest thing to a Kevin King to fill into that spot? And there's some out there, whether it's Ifeatu Melifonwu, who's Obi's brother at Syracuse, literally is a clone of Kevin King. Height, weight, speed, 6'2", 180, 190, can run, tall, long. There's a kid from the University of Washington, Keith Taylor, also looks like a clone of Kevin King. 6'2", tall, long, track speed, similar types of guys. Even Benjamin St. Juice at Minnesota, Minnesota. Another guy went down to the Senior Bowl, 6'3", 200 pounds. These are all tall, long, physical corners that maybe just have a little more consistency to their game than Kevin King, who is a guy that obviously flashed some good stuff, flashed some bad stuff, had some injuries, had some inconsistency with availability. We're just looking for more consistency. If Kevin King wasn't the guy, we need to know it. But the thing with him is he kept, you know, breaking our heart just when we wanted to give him the job back. So I think finding more consistency in that position is really the name of the game in 2021.
There's nothing worse literally than an inconsistent player where you might get an A or an F on any given week. Like you'd rather take the guy that you know is going to be a C or maybe even a C minus because you know what you're getting week in and week out, and you can kind of game plan around those deficiencies. You know, you're going into an NFC championship game with Kevin King thinking, you know what, if we've got a vertical route against Scotty Miller towards the end of half one-on-one, we like our matchup there. If we've got, you know, the ability to match up, you know, maybe with a Chris Godwin or a Mike Evans from time to time, we think, well, he comes in and, you know, maybe injuries played a part, but it, you know, he did not play well in that game whatsoever. If they would have known that they would have got a D minus F game from Kevin King in that game, you know, they can plan around it a little bit more, but they're going in thinking that maybe they're going to get one of the best games and they just didn't. And I think that inconsistency and not knowing what to plan for is just an absolute killer week in and week out.
Yeah. And I think that's fair. And just to kind of bring this full circle back to what to expect, I think it's going to be kind of similar to how things were in Green Bay. It's going to be a little conservative. They're going to give up a lot of catches underneath, maybe some easy ones on third and medium that drive fans crazy. But it's all about the big plays, being opportunistic, preventing those big plays over the top, tackle well, be fundamentally sound. And the other trend I think we might see, we might continue to see kind of a boring group of off-ball linebackers. Remember the last 2 years in Los Angeles, they rolled Micah Kizer, Troy Reader, and Kenny Young. Not the most inspiring group, but they were okay. Obviously a dominant defense while they're under there. So I don't know if we're going to look at our group and think we need some influx of athleticism or influx of an elite prospect there to survive and be a quality defense.
That's one of the things I'm going to be most intrigued on this offseason for Green Bay is how they handle that inside linebacker position, because it absolutely seems that Green Bay does not put a ton of value into it. It certainly seems that LA these past few seasons have not put a ton of value into it. At the same token, the teams that gave Green Bay the most trouble were the teams with a Lavonte David and a Devin White, a Darius Leonard, you know, Eric Kendricks in Minnesota. Like the teams that gave Green Bay trouble were the teams with a really good fast sideline to sideline inside linebacker. So as a GM, do you say, hey, look at what some of these other, and as a coach, do you look at some of these other teams and say, hey, we really struggled against this. It would be nice to have one of those guys on our side. Or do you say, you know what, we're going to kind of stick with what we believe, and we don't think that type of player is indicative of overall success, and we'd rather have defensive linemen, edge rushers, corners, and cover that stuff first, which there's actually, you know, a very strong argument to that mindset as well.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's another kind of positional group. They're looking for stability and balance, whether it's the on-field availability at linebacker or just the voice. They had three different guys wear the green dot last year. That is not acceptable for a defensive quarterback of the group. I know there were some issues with the new guys trying to get up to speed with the scheme and get calls in and checks in pre-snap. There was a little bit of disappointment considering it was a free agent an undrafted free agent and a rookie mid-round pick that was injured early on. So there was three guys kind of behind the eight ball that really kind of set the defense back on some pre-snap looks and just getting lined up. So all in all, looking for more stability, particularly at that off-ball linebacking spot.
I know we're off topic a little bit here, but are you a believer in Chris Barnes? Do you feel like he can be a guy that anchors a middle of a Packers defense?
I do. I think I've seen enough about Chris Barnes and Kamal Martin for them to be kind of our Mike Will or Mike Ted, whatever you want to call the two off-ball linebackers in that scheme there. I really liked his play temperament. I think he was really physical. And just having that style of presence in the middle of defense was something we were kind of missing, you know, ever since the AJ Hawk kind of Desmond Bishop era of just having that middle of the field enforcer. It was painful to see him with that big club on in the playoffs. Obviously, I think that hindered his ability to drag down some tacklers like Cam Akers as he got pushed into the goal line there. But I saw enough. And, you know, considering they cut Kirksey with the high dollar number for 2021, I'd be more than okay with rolling with those two for next season.
I'm definitely there with Chris Barnes. I'm not quite there with Kamal Martin yet, but I'll lean on your expertise on this one and we'll see what happens this next season. All right, just two fast thoughts on two other corners. I do want to get your thoughts on Greg Newsome. Saw you post a little bit about him before we started recording today. He was my other guy along with Asante Samuel that I really, really liked immediately. Was kind of just drawn to his overall ability, but curious your thoughts on him.
Yeah, so Greg Newsome is about 6'1", 180. He's a really physical player. He reminds me a little bit of Kyle Fuller with the Chicago Bears. He's been a really productive player there. And just, you know, put on the Ohio State tape this year when he was in the game, really stifled that Ohio State offense. And Justin Fields, when he went out, they started to move the ball. Really smooth pedal guy. He's got a great transition, really physical in the flat. He finds the ball down the field. Another guy that's a little grabby. He's got a handful of pass interference, handful of holding penalties, but I would rather the aggressive guy, like I had mentioned before, than trying to get the timid guy to be more aggressive. He might be a guy that may have that temperament to slide in a nickel or a safety role in the NFL. Northwestern isn't too known to put out a lot of elite NFL prospects, but they put out smart players and typically NFL ready players. And I think that's what you're going to get with Greg Newsome.
Yeah, there wasn't anything that I saw in his game that I had as a major red flag. Thought he could play either side of the field, potentially play some inside as well. I thought he had ball skills. He more often than not was in phase. Didn't think he panicked overall. Did have some grabbing, but as you mentioned, I didn't think it was anything egregious that couldn't be, you know, kind of coached. And I thought he made receivers work for everything. There was nothing easy when you played against him. So I really, really liked what I saw out of him. The one that I wasn't as high on, and we'll end with this one, your thoughts on Sean Wade. I almost felt like Sean Wade might be more of a safety than a corner. I know there's a few in that camp, but I was wondering your thoughts on him.
So Andy, in 2018, Rondale Moore was a true freshman, won freshman of the year in the Big Ten, led the country in yards after catch. His coming out party was a big upset win against Ohio State that season. Andy, he baptized Sean Wade that day. I am shocked Sean Wade stayed a defensive back nickel after that day. So I see much more of a Jalen Mills style of player, a tough corner that maybe he's going to struggle in coverage, struggle down the field, but you know, you're getting a tough player, a guy that's going to come up and run support and beat up receivers in the route. And you can clearly see the transition to safety is kind of a fluid thing for a style of player like that. So I see more of a Rocky Sin, maybe a Demarius Randall style of player. These are all kind of corners that lack that corner temperament and that corner pedigree, but you have the size, the physicality. And obviously Wade struggled in the playoff against Clemson and struggled against Alabama. So to watch him against some NFL type receivers wasn't too inspiring, but he's a guy that's been at Ohio State for 3 years. He's been a five-star. Everybody want him. He's a good kid off the field. He's done some work off the field as well outside of football. I like his upside. It's just finding where you want to play him, but he's a tough kid. And all these kind of conversations, we're talking about corners in this class, a lot of tough players, a lot of physical players. And I love seeing that out of the cornerback group.
I have a feeling that Wade's going to be one of those guys that goes higher because some teams fall in love with the traits and the off the field and just everything that he kind of brings to the table and think that they can kind of coach him up. It seems like there's always one of those there every year. Of course, Ohio State's always had good luck with corners in the NFL for the most part. So it always, you know, Damon Arnett, not a similar type of player, but obviously we saw him go earlier than a lot of people expected last year as well. So I just feel that way, but I don't know. I feel like he needs
He's a tough one. And when you play big time ball at Ohio State, he's got some really good tape and he's got some clunky tape. So could be your mood, your temperament, what tape you watch that, you know, determines where you put him on the board. I'm really having a tough spot figuring out, is he a late day two player? Is he a mid day three player? Is he undrafted at this point? There's a lot of guys like that. And, you know, there's a player like Kelvin Joseph at the University of Kentucky that's been getting a lot of buzz. He's a redshirt sophomore, but he's an LSU transfer. So he's got the pedigree. He's got the height, weight, speed, ball hawking. He can side saddle. He can play press man, a variety of stuff. Just so inexperienced. I have no idea how to project these types of players and really determine their upside and where they get taken in the pecking order. So my flavor, I love experience. I think cornerback particularly is a learn on the job type of position. So I need guys that have been on the field, got a lot of those cobwebs out, got their, you know, took their lumps and took their punches and are ready to play in the NFL. So there's some guys like a Sean Wade, like a Kelvin Joseph, that I think where they go in the draft is seriously up in the air.
Yeah, where they go, what scheme they end up in, what team, I mean, all of it. You know, Tony Pauline always says the draft is the start of the process, and seeing what team they end up with and getting the coaching and stuff like that. So it'll be fun to unwrap a lot of these results over the course of the next couple of months, see where they end up and break it down all much further from there, I am sure. Ben, absolutely incredible stuff as always. What are you going to be doing for the draft? What are you working on, and where can we find your work?
So I'm back with NFL Network right now for our offseason coverage. So just finished up our week at the Senior Bowl. Unfortunately, no combine, but we should have some heightened pro day coverage coming in the next month or two, as the pro day circuit is going to be that much more focused and intense. Obviously helping out with Path of the Draft and some of our studio shows at NFL Network. But at the end of the day, this culminations, this big, long marathon to our draft broadcast, which as of right now is on schedule to be in person in Cleveland. So that's kind of where this is all heading. And it's about 2 months away. A lot can be decided, up until then.
Yeah, hopefully it is in person. Hopefully we get a live draft in Cleveland. That would be nice. Some return to normalcy there. You do great work as always. Thanks so much for taking some time to come on. Enjoy breaking down all the prospects. If you don't have alerts set on Ben for Twitter, make sure to do so at @BenFennell_NFL. You can follow me on Twitter at @AndyHermanNFL. You can follow the podcast at Packaday Podcasts. Make sure to check out tomorrow's episode and subscribe if you haven't already. If you haven't checked out the YouTube series yet, make sure to check out that as well. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.